Today's show, NFL Draft, Title IX. How will they dole out the money? Matt Patricia goes to Ohio State and two rings, Baldy.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Yes, we're talking pencils. It's the offseason.
Russ Dellinger.
Every spring, I feel like I say this. I hate the draft. Yeah.
And SI's Pat Forty.
I'm going to suggest that if he wants to keep his job, he does not throw the Michigan game.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod. And it is Act of Congress that we are under the obligation to speak about the NFL draft. All podcasts, all sports podcasts have to bring up the NFL draft this week.
Well, we have to bring it up for the next 3 months, right?
Really?
We're just following the law here, Pat. Mm-hmm, just following the law. I believe it is a mandate. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get in trouble.
I will be very excited when we get to the point of hand measurements and
that's the fun. Yeah, that's
thick
when I
people's
really
knees
like
are and.
Really thick the knee. Do they measure the knee? Do they measure the knee?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think so. Like I remember some quarterback had skinny knees. They were concerned he was gonna be injury prone. Mm.
Jane Daniels is skinny.
Yeah.
Work out.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed to work out okay.
No, yeah, I was told hand size, you know. I mean it can be a big strip sack, a lot of stuff. We don't get into that part of it. But I have here and I have acquired the 2025 NFL mock draft 5.0 from Yahoo's Nate Tyson, Charles McDonald. And just generally speaking, looking at the overall trends, you know, because we're highbrow here. Highbrow conversations on how a draft might play out. There are many mock drafts, but this is the best one. So we're looking at it. A few things stood out here. They've got Travis Hunter going number one to Tennessee. Not a QB. Travis Hunter, okay. Cleveland's going to take Cam Ward. New York Giants get Shedeur Sanders. So Cam Ward goes ahead of Shedeur. Travis Hunter is one. New England would get Will Campbell, the offensive tackle from LSU. Mason Graham, Michigan defensive lineman, will go to Jacksonville. And then after that, we got Will Johnson going to Vegas, a cornerback from Michigan. Abdul Carter would go to the Jets, the edge from Penn State, and so on. They actually have a little bit more SEC than others. They have 13 SEC players in the first round. The Big Ten has 12. The Big 12 has 3. The ACC has 1. The Group of 5 has 2. Player from ECU, one from Marshall. Actually, they have 3. And then Ashton Genty, I kind of put him in his own category. So they have 3. It's kind of interesting. Top 10 is 4 Big 10, 3 Big 12, 2 SEC, 1 ACC. We've generally seen this event dominated by the SEC. These numbers are historically almost no longer comparable because the Big 10 now has getting all Oregon's players plus USC or whatever. They don't have anybody, but Ohio State only had 2 players, Josh Simmons on the line and Amika Egbuka, the wide receiver. We've seen in the past, like I think it was like as recently as 3 years ago, Georgia had 5 first rounders after they won the national title. So, Pat, any general thoughts on this draft? Maybe just that part. Like, are you surprised? You know, we had all these guys come back from Ohio State. Everyone talked about how talented that roster was, how much more talented it was than almost every other roster. Only 2 first rounders.
Yeah, I had a couple general thoughts on that. I'll start there since you went with the Ohio State. Yeah, that was the big thing is supposedly they had like 8 guys who were top 100 picks last year who all came back, and maybe none of them improved their draft stock necessarily, but gosh, I sure especially like look at the defensive line and think those guys, JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer, looked like pretty high level prospects. Tyleek Williams inside there. So you know, maybe that's one of the reasons Ohio State was wanting to keep him, is because they weren't first rounders. And so if you're going to be second rounder, third rounder, you stay in college. But I was a little surprised to see not to see more Ohio State representation there. Also, does anybody show this to Shane Beamer? Is Shane Beamer concerned? Because he just came out earlier this week and said, basically, because the SEC dominates the draft, we need more teams in the playoff. And this is not total domination in the draft. If you got 13 and the Big Ten has 12, you might have to share your spots with them. But then, of course, by the same logic, that's why both these leagues are going to say we need four automatic bids each. Also a bad idea. I am not in favor of using the draft to decide who gets in the playoff. So Shane Beamer and I do not see eye to eye on that.
Dan, remember every spring I feel like I say this. I hate the draft, Dan.
Oh! You hate the draft, recruiting, the games.
Really, I guess.
The games.
I didn't say I hated the games. Just some of the games. Just some of the games I hate. Yeah, some of the games I hate.
Act of Congress, okay? There's like Trump signing executive order. He's doing those executive orders. The executive order is we had to talk about the draft. We're a football podcast. You want to violate that thing, hey, Elon Musk will be knocking on your door. I'm not doing it. I'm following.
Yes. Yeah. I think last year I went to the combine and I actually didn't make it into the facility. I never actually went into the combine. I just circulated around Indianapolis to the bars and restaurants and NCAA headquarters and whatever. So I did anything I could not to go in there and see the measuring and the running and the jumping and all that fun stuff that they televise for whatever
reason. This is what we love about you, Ross, is you take a business trip and you don't actually – like most people are like, I went to a convention in Vegas, but I never actually made it to the convention because I was just like hanging out by the pool drinking. Ross does one of those, but it's late February in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
That's why we love him.
Yeah.
What a boondoggle you got there.
Yes.
Yeah. What a boondoggle.
Yes.
Extra steak and shake. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. A little bit of what's it called? What's the restaurant?
St. Elmo's.
St. Elmo's.
Yeah.
Get some shrimp cocktail.
Shrimp cocktail, steak. Yeah, there you go, Dan.
You think
$11 beer and
the only restaurant in Indianapolis. They have marketed themselves well. Indiana's oldest steakhouse. All right. Well, what do you think? On this, would you take Cam Ward? How about this? We'll do real basic. Could you take Cam Ward over Shedeur Sanders?
Yeah, well, sure you could. You like that draft intel?
Hot take.
Dan?
Hot take.
Well, sure you could. Dillinger said, "Yes,
you could draft Ross Dillinger number one if you wanted."
Yeah.
I mean, that's right.
You might have
to put your name in. Yeah.
If we had Ross do a mock draft of most effective collectives or Senate lobbyists,
that's it. Right.
Then it'd be his wheel.
Lobbyists on the Hill. There you go.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's draft the lobbyists on the Hill and see where that leads us.
All right. Good talk.
Yeah.
Good talk.
We did our duty. We did our duty, Dan.
Pat,
I have thoughts.
We did our duty.
I'll come sailing in here to save this disaster.
It's going well.
Podcast.
It's going well.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that nobody loves these quarterbacks and where they're still going to go have them go 2-3 potentially in the draft tells you the desperate need for quarterbacks and the differentiating impact that they make, obviously. But man, I look at some of these other guys and I was like, I mean, I would rather have Abdul Carter. I know it's need, but Tyler Warren, I'd rather have him. There's a lot of guys I'd rather have than either of those quarterbacks, at least as the second and third players off the board. Cam Ward, I mean, I think they both have risk. They may both turn out to be great. But, you know, Cam Ward is not super tall, and he's a freelancer who sometimes makes significant errors, but I really love his feel for the game, his competitiveness. You know, I think that he makes things happen and has had a big impact everywhere he's been. Shador has been outstanding as well. And he's got, I think he has an absolute, he definitely has an NFL arm. He's taller. Both guys are pretty mobile. Shador's tough as hell, takes hits. I think that's actually one of my concerns with him is he holds the ball too long, and you just can't get away with that in the NFL. You know, you've got to be able to drop, set, read, throw. And you also have to be able to do that sometimes behind a bad offensive line. Patrick Mahomes found out exactly how bad his offensive line is. So I would probably take Shador over Cam Ward, but I wouldn't take either of them second and third.
My guess is I know Tennessee's got one and they stick with Will Levis, but it's hard for guys not to go number one. A QB is not to go one. I'll say this at Super Bowl Radio Row. You know, these guys all come through. They bring draft picks. Everyone's getting, you know, they all get sponsored, right? So you're there for Visa or you're there for, you know, what is some of our Invesco QQQ, right? The official ETF of the NCAA. Diag Partners. Why is Diag Custom Staffing
Diag
Solutions?
Partners has nobody on radio.
They got a lot of Michigan players. They could have had all these other guys. What's up, Diag? Or the footballs. They could be sponsoring people. What was that company? I can't remember. My NIL deal's over. Anyway, they come through. Now, and this is not not in a comparison to Cam Ward, because I didn't really hear much about, I assume he came through. Shador Sanders, like, he was the darling of Radio Row, which is a fairly calloused place. It's a lot of, it's a lot of, like, overwrought radio guys and, like, peppy hosts that have to, like, video hosts. They got to do, like, 25 interviews and try to be excited for each one. Like, the players just roll through. Everybody loves Shador Sanders. Yeah. And he was shaking everyone's hands. He'd shake cameraman's hands. He's well trained, and a really good, seemingly just a really, really good guy. Well raised. How about that?
Well there you go.
Raised.
Yep.
I wasn't making it like it was fake. I kind of was like, you can't fake all what he was. Big smiles. People loved him. And I think that'll be a big thing in this draft. There was like an impression that he was this kind of flashy, you know, because he's a Sanders. B, he would do the watch and like some of the stuff on the field. But man, off the field, super impressive guy. And he started to make that. And I could see some NFL teams really, really liking that, especially after like Jalen Hurts's, you know, that kind of mold where you look at it and saying, boy, I love the way this guy carries himself. I love this guy is built to lead. What does Deion have? Leaders and dogs?
Leaders and dogs.
Right. He doesn't have captains. And Shador is a leader. Mm-hmm. And Travis Hunter's a dog. And
they could be two of the top three picks.
They could probably swap too. There's some dog and there's some leader in both. But it's such a great way he phrases that stuff.
Have they determined what position Travis Hunter's going to play? Is he going to play both?
No, we don't determine that yet. We have weeks and months of talking about this.
I'm sorry. Oh, yes.
What do you think we do in the offs? Yes. Oh, we're talking about it.
And jumping and...
Oh, not only that. After they're drafted, it's going to be, what are you playing?
The take industry is just going to never stop on what position he's going to play and how much of each and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is going to be the biggest take since, like, Johnny Manziel.
Harder to find a good corner. A corner of a bigger impact. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think he's better at, corner or wide receiver?
I think slightly.
Bring it up, Ross. Good job, Ross. Bringing up a topic. Now you're in it.
Hey.
This segment was looking like the 2024 Ross. FSU season. We were just started bad and kept getting worse. Pat did a good job there, and now we're rolling. See, he's a little.
I would have said to answer your question.
This is more Florida now. We got a little spike. I thought we were all going to get fired midseason.
Before this past season, I would have said cornerback, but after this past season, man, he just made some phenomenal catches on offense that makes me think that the kid might at least get a crack at both sides of the ball, you know?
Yeah, I think you'd be foolish to bring him in and not give him a crack on both sides of the ball. He wants to, and he's shown that he can play both. So, I mean, you don't necessarily come in and say we're starting him on both sides. You may not start him on either side, but I absolutely think that he deserves a chance to go into a training camp and show whether he can or can't. And even if it's, I agree, Dan, with what you said, corner is more impactful. I mean, we see like Patrick Surtain with the Broncos made such a huge impact, and defensive player of the year at corner. So I would probably start thinking of him as a corner who has, you know, the quote unquote package of plays offensively. And one thing he can do is he's 6'1", he's not 6'4" or whatever, but he gets balls. You throw him up and he's going to win contested catches. So if you can put him in situations there, whether it's, I don't know, whether it's goal line or whatever, but I would find ways to try to use him on both sides of the ball. And real quick, with Shedeur Sanders, Dan, what you said, you know, the way you described him, face of the franchise, he can handle that role. If he's good enough player, he would be a dynamite guy to be, you know, trotting out there as, you know, your main press conference guy and your community relations and 19 million commercials and all that other stuff.
Yeah, he had this great, this is one of the best answers I've ever heard on this, because I always found this to be a little weird. This was like football culture, right? They said, would you be mad if you don't go first overall? And old school football culture's like, yes, I compete. I'm competing against everyone. I have to be number one. And I don't even know if the guys believe it. But yes, you passed on me. I will torture you forever, right? The whole Tom Brady bit. And maybe it works when you're 199th. It obviously worked for Tom Brady. But it was like, if you don't say that, then the draft, those of us who are federally mandated to talk about the draft, well, does he really care about football? Does he care about winning? Why wouldn't you want to be number one? Is he focused on being number one? Instead, Shedeur says, why would I be mad? These are good problems to have. You could be in way worse situation. Being number one doesn't really matter to me. It's all about fit. Like, that's the greatest answer ever. He's right. You're not going to... Do you really think that Shedeur Sanders isn't competitive? Because he's like, yeah, I went third to the New York Giants. Like, pretty awesome. Pretty awesome.
No, I would be much more concerned about fit than things like that if I were being drafted. Because how many quarterbacks have we seen get a bad fit and their careers are over? I think of Tim Couch going number one to the expansion Cleveland Browns and never having a chance. David Carr, when he went to I think they were expansion Texans then. You get sacked 900 times and your team's terrible and you're too beat up and your career, your stock is damaged. I would be much more focused on going to a place where I have a chance to succeed right away.
Yeah, I think that's the bit. I love that answer and the confidence to say that answer. So
yeah,
maybe some old school football guys, you know, snort and fire at, you know, is he tough enough? Is he competitive enough? But I would not worry about that when it comes to Shedeur. That would be my least. Probably wants to go to New York too.
Boy, right? He's got a New York personality.
Yeah,
it would work.
He's got the whole bit. All right. I think we've completed our federally mandated draft talk. Yeah,
18 minutes. 18 minutes too long.
Yeah. Let's give Ross a bone here. Let's throw Ross a bone.
There we go.
You ready?
We're talking bourbon?
No. We're going to
talk.
Some legislation. Let's talk some legislation.
There we go. Legislation.
Mm. Yeah. It's legislation. The Department of Education came out this week and reversed a previous decision that said Title IX does not apply. I don't know if it's a decision. It's guidance.
Guidance. Yeah. Guidance.
Guidance. Mm-hmm. Does not apply to name, image, and likeness deals. So at the final days of the Biden administration, they said it does. So therefore, if you were somehow trying to run an athletic department, you might have to figure out how to make all NIL payments or the direct payments have to be equaled out between female and male athletes. This decision seems to just leave it open to the whims of the school or the market forces, which in some cases could be much more for a female athlete, i.e. Caitlin Clark, or maybe like a Paige Beckers or something, or Juju Watkins. But that would lead to, I would say, the vast majority, I think you've said 80-85% of the money going to football players of this. So what do we got? What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think most schools are preparing to spend 85-90% of their rev share pool on football and men's basketball, both were, you know, around 70-80% on football, in another 10-15, maybe to 20% on men's basketball. And so that would have put them in violation of this guidance, certainly, that said that the rev share payments, which are NIL payments directly from the school. That's how college athletic leaders are describing it, is that these are payments from the school buying the athletes non-exclusive or exclusive NIL rights, and that these payments, the guidance had originally said, should be split evenly. And obviously, that's an issue if you're planning on, if most schools are planning on spending 80-90% on men's sports. So that led to certainly a lot of freaking out about a month ago when that came out. Plans that athletic directors and school presidents had spent months making, I think, were suddenly at risk. But most thought that this would probably be rescinded, and that's exactly what happened. Just took a few weeks, but it was rescinded. The thing is it was out there, right? And it'll always be out there. And it'll be out there for any Title IX lawyer who wants to sue over this matter and can go back and cite this document. So that's kind of the real, probably long-term effects here, that there are still effects to this and impacts, and it is future potential lawsuits. Dan, we talked about this a lot. This is the single biggest kind of, quote, issue around all the rev share, is the distribution of revenue by sport and by sex. You know, how do you do it? How do you distribute the funds? Do the funds actually fall under Title IX? Part of the rescinded guidance was the Department of Education, now, of course, under new leadership with a new administration, saying nowhere in Title IX does it mention an athletic department, you know, revenue share payments fall, you know, have to be split evenly. So this is going to be something that's not going to die, right? We're going to see lawsuits filed. This is going to go, it's going to continue to be an issue in years to come.
Quick question on this. Will public universities have to disclose at least proportions of their revenue shares with each sport? Is any of this going
Shouldn't
to be disclosed?
They have to
Even
disclose?
If it's not individual athletes, but we have $20.5 million and we are giving X amount to football, X amount to men's basketball, X amount to women's basketball, et cetera.
They will have to disclose, I believe they'll have to disclose a breakdown of all that, of their pay with the cap management system, which is like an LBI software, which also used by the NBA, I think. So they will have to break down all that. Now, the big question is, will that be made public in some way?
Yes, that's my question.
So what I understand is they're working on something to be made either internally available to schools to see what everybody else is paying, maybe not with names of players, but by position, by sport. They're working on maybe creating something like that. The problem is the antitrust violation in that, in putting out, I guess, you know, figures of contracts can be in violation of some laws. So they're having a little issue, I guess, maybe doing that. So they'd like to do it, it sounds like, because all the schools would like to see, of course, what everybody else is paying and how much they're paying per sport. And you guys know that when we get into the meat of this whole thing, a coach would love after a loss to get up to a podium and say, well, the team we just lost to is spending $3 million more on their team than us.
Sure. Well, I know. And we know that Dan is wants this cloaked in secrecy and misinformation. but I would, and I don't even say, I don't even want individual totals. I just want to know,
why not?
Like, well, I mean, if they want to give them to us, that's fine. But if they want to draw a line somewhere for privacy's sake,
hey, public employee.
Yeah, well, then fine. Okay. I would be fine with that. Clemson is paying its quarterback $1.5 million this year. South Carolina is paying its quarterback $1.3 million, and so on and so forth. That would be fine. But the more information, you know, I'm in the category, the group, or the camp of more information, the better. Not necessarily just for comparative, so for the athlete's sake, to say, I'm a women's volleyball player, and I'm good, and I can get NIL payment. Well, who's actually interested? Which schools are funding women's volleyball and which aren't? You know, would I be better off looking at a school that has a $600,000 pool for women's basketball over one that has a $200,000 pool? That's the kind of information I think could be useful for the athletes.
So two things here, because I'll get to you misrepresenting my position as usual. First off, if you're a public employee, you're getting paid by a state government or some kind of state, whatever the thing is, your salary is public. I mean, that's different to me. I mean, if they're paying, whatever, you're paying $1 million to this guy or 15 grand. You can look up on, I can find out what the lowest paid guy at most college athletic departments are getting paid. It's a public thing. So that to me, that should be public. Now, I understand they're going to say, well, this entity isn't open to that, or they'll look at, we just had another Alabama is now saying athletes shouldn't pay taxes. Yeah. I mean, like we're deep down the rabbit. I mean, we're bizarro world at this point.
Yeah. Bad ideas proliferating. That's good.
Yeah, right. And there's a guy, like there's a truck driver who's a big Tide fan going, yeah, hell yeah. I don't want him paying. Like you're paying.
I'll pay his share.
Yeah, I'll pay his share. I'll pay the quarterback share. He's only making $1 million. I'm making 42.5 over here. Like what? I don't even know where we are in this. We've lost our way, but that's fine. But hey, if you're a public employee, you're a public employee. You don't want that? Go work somewhere else. What I have been saying on this other issue, Pat, is you're saying people should voluntarily reveal how much money they're making in a private business deal with not only their own college, but the NCAA and everybody else and their competition, which I would find to be, as an individual, to be completely ridiculous, and we wouldn't ask anyone else to do that. It's one thing to know for various purposes how much Deion Sanders is paid to coach and work at the University of Colorado, or Dawn Staley is paid to coach at the University of South Carolina. It is another to say how much you're getting for those Aflac commercials. It's a totally separate thing. So I would not expect and nobody else who isn't in a imbalanced situation would suggest those guys should have to reveal that so that other coaches somewhere and other companies, whatever Aflac's competition is, can sit there and say, oh, let me analyze how much they're spending on that. That is not how the private sector works. Now, you work for the public sector, you can find out. We do not know the coaching salaries of NFL. You know, they don't have to reveal. You want to coach the Dallas Cowboys? They're not going to put their PDF of their contract up on the website. So that is different. It's very simple.
We do know how much first round draft picks make by slot.
They do. That's collectively bargained. You want to collectively bargain with these guys and say, I got to know your side. We do not know how much money Patrick Mahomes makes in commercials, because that would be detrimental to his ability to run his business. So, you know, keep misappropriating my.
Except most of these guys are not getting paid by Aflac. They're getting paid to play football by the boosters. You know, it's what they're characterized as.
Hey, you know, you don't know. I mean, this is the system.
This is an endorsement opportunity. No, it's not. It's a,
you want
to
pillage their privacy.
Third and seven.
Pillage their privacy. That's it. We'll come back after this and we got more other than Title IX. All right, here's the text of Title IX as a law. This is it. No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any educational program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. That's it. So what that basically did was, back in the, this was passed in 1972. Back in the day, you would have like, at your local public high school, there'd be 11 boys sports, and there'd be like maybe 6-on-6 basketball for the girls. That'd be it. And so they said, hey, you got to have more teams. You can't just sit there and say, well, they're just girls, they can't play, all that stuff. Sometimes laws are like, it's almost too hard to fathom. There are people that fought this or fought that concept. Like, really? Yeah. People really thought this? Like, we have a boys soccer team. We shouldn't have girls. Girls can't play soccer. Like, like that. People thought this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, really thought it, right? They had to create a law. Yeah. Like, they couldn't just go down to high school and say, hey, man, why don't you have a girls soccer team? Like, they had to create a law. Like, it's insane. Anyway, that's all this thing says. So the idea, and it goes to the college level, you know, equal number of participants, right? It's kind of how they sorted this thing out. So which was tough for the men's sports because football has so many players and there's no comparable deal, and there's no women's football. Now, maybe it's women's flag football one day. Who knows? But people love football in this country. So. Ross, you're talking to these guys more than I am, but the basic thing is, okay, we're going to provide the opportunity to an equal number of women and men. I think the issue would be denied the benefits of. Is that right? That'll be the part that would be like, well, do you have to pay them equally? Or is simply providing that platform so that the most valuable basketball player in college basketball last year was Caitlin Clark. Because we provided a platform for her, and look what she did. At that point, do the Iowa men be able to say, hey, she's making all the money, we should get it? You know, so it can go both ways on the rarest of occasions. But that's the issue, right? Be denied the benefits of.
Yes. You know, this is, as you mentioned, this is a very old law, right? 52, 53 years old. It was obviously created at a time when revenue share in athletics didn't exist, when billion-dollar budgets and TV deals didn't exist. So obviously college athletics has evolving more into a professionalized model. And I think many people believe that Title IX in certain ways doesn't apply to this evolution, to this new evolving kind of landscape that we're seeing. And there's debate on that side, right? You talk to some lawyers, they say it applies. You talk to others, they say it doesn't. Obviously, a lot of administrators are bracing for Title IX lawsuits. You know, like I said, starting July 1, when this thing gets implemented, if it's approved by the judge in April. So that is the fight. Does Title IX apply to direct payments to athletes, rev share payments to athletes, even if they are classified as NIL payments? And one of the things, and I know we've discussed this before, is like, if you do split it 50-50, how soon will you get a lawsuit from football and men's basketball players that says, we generated most of this money and we're not getting enough of what we generated?
All of it.
Because we all know in athletic, in a power conference athletic department, right? Football is sometimes the only sport that actually turns a profit and makes legitimate revenue. Sometimes there's plenty of schools that men's basketball makes a little bit, and even some schools where baseball makes some. And I think there's a very outliers where Olympic sports like women's volleyball make a little bit. But for the most part, administrators would tell you, and they have figures to back it up, is that 90% of their budget and separately their TV deals, their conference TV deals, are generated from football. And so that's the way they're going to split the revenue. And that's what they're using to justify the split and how they're going to distribute the revenue.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if, I mean, I'm not a legal expert, but if there's successful legal challenges to get a 50-50 revenue split, men and women, I don't see that probably coming to pass. As I've said many times, you know, the argument to me that football should get all the money because they create all the money, sounds great in a vacuum. It is not historically the way college athletic departments have ever been run. It's not the way universities in general are run. The sociology department may not bring in as many students as the engineering department at Purdue or something like that, but that doesn't mean you just don't fund the sociology department. So, you know, I think the you know, kind of attempt to change the balance here to a you get what you earn or you keep what you earn thing is counter, and I just think would be absolutely devastating to Olympic sports in the United States. I'm not saying that Olympic sports should get a, you know, 50-50. I don't think that should be the case. I don't think that will be the case, but I think it would be a really bad decision if we eventually get to football gets everything, basketball gets a little, and nobody else gets anything.
Purdue sociology getting astray there. Man.
Purdue sociology,
what
sorry.
What did they do to you, man?
I'm guessing that Purdue sociology is not bringing. I hope they have a school of sociology.
I'm going to check while Ross speaks. Might be the best one in the country for all we know.
One of the
they got a department.
There we go. Good.
Over at Beering Hall, Suite 1114. This podcast will not be very popular.
One of the things that I think schools are using to balance things out are the additional scholarships, right? Part of the deal here under the settlement is there's unlimited scholarships up to the roster limits, right? So you can scholarship an entire roster now as opposed to previous where you couldn't. And a lot of schools are adding scholarships, and most of them are adding more scholarships on the women's side in a way to balance out the, quote, benefits, Dan, as you mentioned earlier, that women will get more. So you can expect women's sports to get more scholarship money, but men's sports to get more revenue money. Will they, in the end, will they come together and balance out? Probably not 50-50, right? But it'll be more, if you're just looking at rev share, which is probably 85-15, 90-10 when it comes to men and women. If you lump in the scholarships too, which many of administrators are doing, maybe it becomes more like 60-40 or something like that. It gets closer to where you want to be. But again, they're preparing for Title IX lawsuits. They've been preparing for almost a year now. And they're justifying the payments based on who generates the revenue.
We prepare future scholars and leaders to understand and tackle 21st century local and global social challenges from a sociological perspective that emphasizes social theory and social science analytics. I am not smart enough for the Purdue sociology department because I don't even know what that sentence means.
We do have at least one listener who's a Purdue fan.
We have a lot of like Purdue fans.
Get fired up about the drum and other things.
That was Pat Forty bashing your sociology department, not me.
You're the drum basher.
And the Lafayette.
West Lafayette versus Lafayette. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, great work over there. They do research. They have a graduate school. This is terrific. I don't know where this will weigh out, but there will be billable hours. I can tell you that. Men and women lawyers will be making much money off of this. That will go out equally. Football. Ohio State has found a defensive coordinator, and it is former Detroit Lions head coach Matt Patricia. Longtime Bill Belichick disciple. Came up through the Patriots organization, was highly regarded as a defensive coordinator with the Pats. Obviously, his head coach, Bill Belichick, is now at North Carolina. He hired his son, I think, to be his defensive coordinator. So Matt Patricia needed a job, and he's going to go to replace Jim Knowles at Ohio State. Thoughts, Ross?
Yeah. Big hire. Another NFL guy, right? Coming to college football. Not that that's anything new, but I feel like we're seeing a lot of it and a lot of big moves from the NFL to big names from the NFL to college recently. And I think it probably has to do with what we're talking about, right? Everything that we've been talking about for many months and already on this pod today is the evolution of the college game. I think that Ohio State commands pretty much the best candidates. Right. Pretty much. I mean, as far as what they'll pay and what kind of talent there is there. It was interesting, Dan, during this search, we saw a few things happen, including Auburn's defensive coordinator get his salary doubled. And I think that probably goes back to there being an opening at Ohio State. And so it's been interesting to see the avenues that Ryan Day is going down, but this is certainly, you know, a big hire, a big name, an accomplished guy. I was trying to look to see when the last time, if ever, he's been in college. You have to go back to 2003, and he was a grad assistant at Syracuse, Matt Patricia. So it's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's still amazing to me if you go back to, I don't know, October, mid-November even, somebody told you that the Belichick mafia is going to be all over college football. Like, no way. But here we are, not just the hoodie in Chapel Hill, but now Matt Patricia at D.C. At Ohio State. I'm sure he's a very good defense coordinator. He wasn't a very good head coach on the NFL level, but, I mean, he wouldn't have worked for Belichick for that long without having been good at his job. So anticipating that he can make a transition to college schemes, relating to college players and making his schemes understandable and everything to 18 to 22 year olds, it should work out fine. They're certainly going to have good players there. It is interesting, as you said, that they, you know, the amount of back and forth between college and the NFL seems to be increasing. You know, Chip Kelly gone, come back. And, you know, there's been several other coaches now where it just seems like it's more interchangeable, the jobs, whether that's salary or whether that's style of play, I don't know. But another example of it here.
Well, the Belichick coaching tree is kind of wild. You have Jed Fish up at Washington.
Yeah.
You have Bill O'Brien at Boston College. If you want to extend it out, Kirk Ferentz worked for him. So did Nick Saban. Dude.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they did. They worked for him. Yeah. Nick Saban.
Saban retired. Dan, did you hear?
But he has many tree limbs himself.
Yeah, he does. Yes, he does.
Like somebody with more ambition than I should do a Belichick. I mean, he could be everywhere. You take all the people that work for those guys, like, it's all over the place. Patricia was a very good defensive coordinator, except for that Super Bowl loss to the Eagles, where he let Nick Foles torch him. He is an interesting guy, though. He has received a degree in aeronautical engineering from RPI. It's literally a rocket scientist. And he will say, I've talked to Matt Patricia a few times, and he will say, I'm an engineer by trade. He famously has the pencil. You know, he has the pencil. When he started at the New England Patriots, Belichick would get these guys that come in as like volunteers and just, you know, whatever, anybody trying to get a foot in the door, as he did. And he would make them diagram plays. He would run a play and you'd have to, in pencil by hand, diagram the entire play. And he'd leave these guys for hours and hours to do this stuff. And that's how they would learn football. And you had to do it by pencil. So Patricia would walk around with a pencil in his ear in case he got told at any moment to diagram something. And he'd say that's, he would know where the pencil is at all time. And then it became his signature deal. It's a Dixon Ticonderoga number 2. That's the pencil.
An excellent pencil.
Excellent
pencil.
And
by the way,
go ahead.
Lee Corso, you know this? Lee Corso sold Dixon Ticonderoga pencils for a long time.
He did.
It all connects.
I think he's part owner, and he would hold it on the game day. Pat, you got that.
Yes.
It all comes full circle. Oh, yeah. We should have seen it coming.
There you go.
Yes. He would use it as the point. Not so fast, my friend. That was a Dixon Ticonderoga number 2. Yes, we're talking pencils. Yes, we're talking pencils. It's the off season.
People don't use pencils as much anymore, right?
No.
Unless you're in school.
Well,
I mean, I don't even know whether they use them in school.
Tech, no.
They use mechanical, the old mechanical pencils. Remember those, the clicks? You click the lid. I know, and they broke off. The tip would break off.
All the time.
Oh, you screwed up.
Whole mess. Yeah.
Well, there's the
nothing like an old pencil sharpener, Dan. You know, when you put it in, you got the pencil sharpener and you got the shavings coming off. It's going all over the floor. That was always fun.
Well, they'd have it up by the blackboard, but that was the one way you could get out of your seat, because you'd be like, I got to sharpen
my pen. Oh, yeah.
Teacher would be trying to talk. You grind that thing like,
And they got the hyper kids up there like, I'm going to grind it down to a nub.
That's right. That's right. And then they made the ones that where you didn't have to get out of your seat. You had the little small ones that you could, ones. And then you'd have to
those
twist
were terrible
the pencil
too.
In
not they never
not
worked
as good.
Well.
Not as
they
good.
Didn't. They didn't work as well. You're right. They didn't work as well.
Oh, yeah. Like the cute girl in class would get up by the pencil sharpener. Everyone would be running up there. Mm-hmm. I'll sharpen your pencil for you. Sorry. It's terrible.
This segment of Old Guy Radio brought to you by Dixon Ticonderoga.
There you go. The Dixon. No, there's no pencils anymore. There are no pencils. Yeah, the number
you
two.
Always had to have a number 2 to do the Scantron test. You always had to have a number 2 pencil. Yeah, or number 1 pencil. Nope. Number 4. Nope. Got to have number 2.
Very little pencil work. It's all computers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Patricia's a tech guy, but he will have that pencil. Right. That's his thing. So get ready. The pencils, buy Ticonderoga. You know the Buckeye fans. They'll buy anything. They buy, you know, like if you need some footballs, championship footballs. No, people are going to be buying those things all over Columbus, man. He could get a little, he'd get his own NIL deal.
Till they give up like 24 points to Michigan State, then they'll be boycotting Dixon Ticonderoga.
His bit on the pencil, though, over the pen, or the technology of those sideline laptops, is the pencil works in all weather.
Mm.
It's kind of Woody Hayes-like.
Yeah,
he'll be able to scribble something down. Now, in an illustrious run with the Lions, 6 wins, 3 wins, 4 wins. It was a disaster, total disaster. They blew some good draft picks, tried to waste the prime of, and this is with Matthew Stafford, mind you.
Yeah.
Okay. You know how hard it is to win 3 games with Matthew Stafford as your quarterback? Well, a lot of Lions coaches did it. So I feel like, hear me out. Does he owe Lions fans some payback, which would mean when Ohio State plays Michigan next year and Michigan State at some point, he throws the game? Would that? Does he owe Lions fans? You're an angry NFL fan often, Pat. Do you think that if a head coach you know, really throws you in the gutter for a couple seasons. Do they need to like make amends when they hit the college ranks?
I'm going to suggest that if he wants to keep his job past the 12th game of 2025, he does not throw the Michigan game by any means. Do not throw the Michigan game. So that would be bad job security.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. But I'm sure he'll get a warm welcome in Ann Arbor next year for even more reasons than just that he's wearing scarlet and gray. Scarlet and gray. All right, let's take a break. All right, it's almost March, basketball season, and the SEC, if you hadn't noticed, is dominating college basketball. Poor ACC.
What?
Oh, they are. Tennessee's 5. Basketball. I was watching them the other night. Kentucky's 12. 1 and 2, though, are Auburn, Alabama. Florida's really good. Everyone's good. They could get 12 teams in.
13, 14? I mean.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just means more teams in the basketball tournament, baby.
Yeah, and the ACC's got nothing. They got Duke, and they got Clemson, kind of. Yeah, tough go over
Duke
there.
Duke and then Clemson, Louisville.
Yeah, Louisville's all right. But the big game this weekend is Auburn, Alabama. It's 1-2. And, you know, these two programs have kind of sneakily cared at various times about basketball and been good at basketball. Obviously, other teams have been. Programs have been Florida won a couple national titles, Kentucky clearly, Arkansas clearly, Tennessee always cares about basketball. So it's not a total like nobody cares, but Ole Miss, Mississippi State, your school, you're ranked, Ross, Mississippi State,
yeah,
in the top 25. Yeah, I'm glad you're paying attention. Anyway, everybody's doing well.
Hey, Texas. I went to a game a couple weeks ago. It wasn't pretty for the Bulldogs. They got
who'd they play?
Missouri, but
really?
Okay. They play Missouri.
Missouri, who's actually pretty good, too.
A&M, I think, is 8. I could look up the rankings, but I'm not going to do that. Anyway, Pat, 1-2, Auburn, Alabama. Crazy. They call it the IBOB, Iron Bowl of Basketball, which is not a really good name. I think they were trying to rename it. Wasn't Casa Grande trying to rename that thing down there at AL.com? Need a better name than Iron Bowl of Basketball.
Yeah. IBOB, not good, but. Yeah, first time ever in SEC history that they've had 1-2 playing each other. So it's a big deal. It is a big deal at two schools that, this doesn't matter near as much as the football version, but it matters quite a bit. I was trying to think of the converse, like here in my state. If Louisville and Kentucky were 1-2 in football, the place would be going insane. So I am sure they are really into it down there, and it should be a great scene. I'm going to be there. I'm looking forward to it. They're both really good teams. Like they might be the best two. Throw in Duke, and I think throw in Florida. I think Florida's incredibly good. For this to have happened, I mean, the SEC, the whole evolution, they've just gotten better over the last 10 years, really. They've scheduled better. They've had hired better coaches. Not a lot of choir boy coaches in the group, but a lot of checkered pasts and controversies things like that.
Just what the SEC loves, Pat.
Exactly. No, I mean, it fits. It's on brand. I mean, Bruce Pearl against Nate Oates. We can go through the curriculum vitae for those guys. But the big thing these particular teams have done, them and Tennessee, is they've gotten good players and they've kept them. And it's one thing to go out with, you know, and get good transfers, but you get good transfers and then you keep them for 2 years, 3 years, and things start to look a little bit more magical. I mean, Jani Broome, who is probably the second best player in the country to Cooper Flagg at Duke, is on
Auburn
year 3 at Auburn. And, you know, a lot of people thought he could have gone pro. Mark Sears and Grant Nelson at Alabama. Exactly. Guys that played in the Final Four for them last year. Year 3 at Alabama for Sears. Year 2 at Alabama for Nelson. That's, I think, it's not just getting transfer talent. It's getting transfer talent and keeping it and building some continuity that seems to really be working. And, you know, the SEC, 13, 14 teams in the tournament to me would be a bit obnoxious, but they're in the mix for that. You know, if you look at the mock brackets that Dan loves so much.
Mm. Who are the bubble, the group of bubble SEC teams watching down the stretch?
Arkansas is bubble. Let's see here. Georgia, I would say, is bubble.
Yeah, Georgia. I was watching Arkansas last night, and they put this up. And
Vanderbilt.
Everybody's got a chance practically except like LSU and
South Carolina.
South Carolina. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
everyone else is in the mix.
Well, you can go, well, that's too much. And maybe it is, but then what they did in the non-conference, like they did go out and prove.
Yeah. No, I know.
So they it's did. Like, what do you want to do?
And yeah, the ACC challenge is like, what? They lost two games. Maybe it was like 14-2 or something like that. Yeah. 15-1.
It's like 100-0, basically.
You also watch it and you're like, these teams are fantastic when they get cranking. And the thing is about their coaches with the little baggage, if you will, and there's various baggages. There's bags all over the place. They pretty much have gotten every transgression down if you go through the entire list. They are hiring the ones that can coach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's guys that used to get in trouble for buying a player or this or that, and that's how they were winning. And then you get the guys that can really coach. And so you go with a guy like Bruce Pearl, right? You can come up with a whole mess of stories about Bruce Pearl. But at the end of the day, he won every single place he goes. Under any rule, at any level, his teams win. He's a great coach. So, you know, it doesn't matter if he's at Southern Indiana Division II, or Wisconsin, Milwaukee, or Tennessee, or Auburn, whatever. Like, you get guys that can just coach. Chris Beard, guy can just coach, right? Won at Little Rock, won at Texas Tech, was winning at Texas, now he's winning. It doesn't really matter. When you get those guys, you're going to win. And especially now that there are strong-ass offers, which once doomed a coach, no longer a problem. You put that on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Made him a strong-ass offer. You don't need the FBI to tell you what's going on anymore. Yeah. You know, and so now it's
there's a couple.
Go ahead.
There's a couple of, you mentioned Chris Beard. There's a couple of Chris's in Mississippi, you know, in Starkville. Jans. Chris Jans. I mean, he's won everywhere. Go all the way back to like, you know, Bowling Howard Green. College and Bowling Green. Yeah, I mean, he's won everywhere he's been too. Yeah, great.
Great hire by New Mexico State, which was one of their more inspired hires. And then they got rid of the AD that made the hire really weird down there. I thought they were trying to be relevant at New Mexico State, but...
I think that's an excellent point, Dan, is that the SEC has often had a lot of good recruiters. It has not always had a lot of good coaches. And I remember distinctly, you know, in like in the 90s when it was Pitino and Nolan, just with style of play and with in-game coaching and scouting, just being 10 steps ahead of everyone else. The other people had talent, but it wasn't very well coached talent. And just kind of these disparate talents running around there. And now you have got some of the absolute best X and O guys in the country in the league.
And then you have, like, I don't think he has any baggage or not that, I mean, we all get dinged up here or there. No, but like Rick Barnes, probably the best coach not to make a fight. Like that guy's won, you know, George Mason, Providence, Clemson, Texas, Tennessee. He wins. That was one of the best hires.
I think he's the winningest active coach in the game right now.
Yeah, that was one of the best hires Tennessee had. And it's funny, there's two Texas coaches going, and then there's a third up at Marquette in Shaka Smart. Like, Texas, it's, I don't know. You can leave Texas and be like, I can win again. But Texas is doing fine as well. But no, I mean, Rick Barnes is just, I mean, it's just every time. It's just they're great teams. They're finding good players. So it is the league of great coaches. And that's really when you win in college basketball. They, you know, people talk about the old Big East. Well, it's because look at these guys. You know, they had everybody. You know, Thompson and Massimino and Carnesecca and Patino, young Patino, and then Calhoun and Boeheim and all these guys. Well, they're all, you know, they all knew how to coach basketball. The coach is just so important in college basketball. There's just no other way around it. One quick note on my favorite league, the Big East. They lost last night to Villanova, but Rick Pitino is 70 something years old, and he's like could be coach of the year. Crazy. Like, again, I don't talk about every transgression. He's got them.
check.
Yes, need a team to play defense, though. There he is. Yeah. Like, it don't matter. He checks all the boxes. El Rick. He's back. 70-something years old at St. John's, and his teams, they were number 9. They lost. I mean, it was whatever, near buzzer beater. Great game at Villanova. And then you got, he's coming up with everything else, is our two-time reigning defending national champion, Dan Hurley. You see this scene the other night. I cannot get enough. I know everyone's hating on Dan Hurley, but I can't get enough. The pro wrestling aspect of this guy is just so entertaining. It was Tuesday night. Creighton went with dollar beer night out there. And then UConn went in and won. And as he's walking off, he's arguing with the fans, of course, yelling, two rings. And then he goes, line of the year, two rings, Baldy. Dan Hurley's bald.
He's bald. You're bald. It's like Costanza on Seinfeld. You're bald.
Amazing. I can't get enough. Dan Hurley is a nut. Great. He's nuts.
That was two rings, in the video. Baldy. Yeah, the video, he's walking into the tunnel, and he's in the tunnel. He can't be seen anymore by fans, but he's still, like, yelling. He's still yelling, and he's just – that dude is another level of competitive, woo. I feel like.
I'm the – yells at the ref. I'm the best coach in the country, all this stuff. It's fantastic. He's crazy. No. We need this. He is the character.
No,
he's your villain.
Filter.
None.
There's no filter there. None. No
now,
filter.
Now that we're no stopped chill. Trying to put morality on our coaches, we've got this whole cast of lunatics, and college basketball is better than ever. That's not how a coach should behave. It's like, well, it's basketball. Whatever, man.
No, Dan, it's good. You must be reading the 40 minutes because I did talk about the 70-year-old and up coaches who are kicking ass. Rick Pitino at 72. Rick Barnes at 70. Tom Izzo at 70. Kelvin Sampson at 69.
There you go.
Like all the old guys got out of the ACC, but everywhere else, they're not just still coaching. They're coaching really well. And yeah, the Pitino thing is endlessly fascinating to me. And we can all just, we can pray for a Big East Saturday night Madison Square Garden championship game between Dan Hurley and Rick Pitino.
Absolutely.
Who get after each other.
Great crowd, because UConn brings the second biggest crowd. It'll be absolute bedlam in there. No, it's great. You hear these old, it's a different sport. I can't adjust. And you get young guys do that too. And that's fine. That's my thing. Like, Bennett at Virginia dropped out and stuff, but we're running the old coaches out, running them out. Like, Izzo's still screaming at everybody. You want to play for Kelvin Sampson? You think Kelvin Sampson's practices are any less crazy than they were? No. Look at these coaches. Pearls on like, if you can coach basketball, you get your players and then you coach them up. It's such a fallacy. NIL's made it impossible to coach. Really? Looks like we got a whole bunch of great guys doing a great job. Like the guys that really couldn't do it or didn't want to, that's fine. Tony Bennett was a good coach, but the idea that you can't coach these teams. Yeah, look at Houston. That's the hardest nosed program in the country. So,
yeah, no, their practices are merciless. Kelvin doesn't spare anybody. I do think there's a slight evolution, I think, with him. I think he turns and yells to Kelvin Sampson Jr., his son, a little more than at the players.
You got to do it.
Goes bench and sits down. He's like, what the hell's he doing out there?
Yeah.
Instead of saying to the player, what are you doing out there?
Yeah.
Says it's Kelvin Jr.
All right. Good stuff. Two rings, Baldy. We'll be back next week. More College Football Inquirer. Talk to you later.